I teach young people today, do your own advertising. You know, if you farm out your advertising, the person, the third party that's doing your ad, they don't know your business. They'll say things that maybe ain't true. And the secret to advertising is be truthful. Today, yeah. You have to be 100% truthful in advertising.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is a show about entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Whether it's mountain biking with a client or enjoying craft beer with colleagues at the office, my guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and newsletter subscriber sign-up are available at proco360.com. Subscribe to the podcast via your app. Just search ProCo 360. In this episode, Colorado business legend Jake Jabs of American Furniture Warehouse. I've converted a radio show to podcast format, so please excuse the adjustments needed. It was just such an honor to interview Jake. I wanted to bring him to you in this format. I know you'll love his story. It's an exciting and amazing rise from humble beginnings to the man we now know as one of Colorado's most successful entrepreneurs. Jake shares business lessons, and for those who've seen his commercials, you'll hear the story of the tigers in his ads. Glad he's here. Before you hear Jake, let's thank the show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. And MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. Okay, on we go to my interview with Jake Jabs. The people I've been speaking with and telling them about having you on the show are really curious about how you got started, the story behind your building your business and so forth. And it goes way back even to growing up on a farm, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, let's start with my parents. My parents were immigrants. My dad was born and raised in Poland. My mother was from Russia. And so I think one thing, I'm a first-generation American. Family of nine kids. The way they got started, they were sharecroppers on the Crow Indian Reservation in Montana. That's why most immigrants come over with a shirt on their back, you know. Mm-hmm. So they had to get started so they could sharecrop. And so nine kids in the family. So we grew up really poor. We grew up. I remember as the family grew, there was five boys in the family. Dad moved this log cabin up next to the small frame house, and there was no heat in that log cabin. And I remember getting up in those cold Montana winter mornings with no heat and make a beeline to the stove where mother had the coal stove going, and we'd dress around the stove. But that was no electricity, no running water, you know. And this was before.
You had an outhouse? Grew up with an outhouse? That was it?
Outhouse. I had an outhouse, a Sears catalog out in the outhouse. And you could go in the outhouse in those cold Montana ones. But, you know, we didn't know we were poor. That's the way it was. And by the way, we weren't the only family that was doing that, by the way. I mean, that's kind of that was the real world, you know, back then. So anyway.
Well, not my real world growing up.
But in the, you know, in lots of grass in Montana.
Yeah, no.
So anyway, so you grew up poor, but we didn't know we were poor. You know, our parents said, hey, this is America, land of opportunity. And my dad only went to second grade. My mother only went to seventh grade. My dad always wanted us to get an education. He felt left out because he didn't have he only went to the second grade. He didn't have the opportunity to go to school. So he all wanted us to go to school. So we all went to college. And that was kind of our start. Now, the way I got off of the farm is I went to college, and this was during the Korean War. And Dad says, take ROTC, because take ROTC, you get a commission. So I got a commission in the Air Force, went in the Air Force as second lieutenant in the Air Force instead of a buck private in the Army. This was the draft. You remember the draft?
Oh, I don't remember the draft. No, I've heard of it, though.
Yeah, I remember the draft.
Yep.
If you didn't do something like it, you got drafted in the Army. So actually, the three of us boys grad from MS State all got commissions. We're all in the service at the same time. So that was a real opportunity. And I think where I started learning entrepreneurship was right then. We actually had to work our way through college. You know, the family, Dad didn't have enough money to pay for our college. So he gave us, at those days, you could register at Montana State College in Bozeman, Montana for $50.
That was it for the tuition?
$50. And what bothers me today a little bit is they're charging too much commission in colleges. And I'm speaking to colleges about that. Hey, guys, you know, let's lower the commission or the
tuition.
Because it costs too much to go to college. Anyway, then we had to go, go to work, and we did. I worked on the farms around there, whatever we did. But we were musicians, and music was my entree into business.
Mm-hmm.
We were a family of musicians. We used to play My dad was a violin player. My older sister played piano. My older brother played guitar, and I was playing tenor banjo in those days.
Really?
Yeah, we were playing for country dances around Lodge Grass.
Did you get paid much to do that?
No, it was money. It was something, you know. And so, but going to college, my brother and I formed a band. We started playing music.
What was it called?
Rocky Mountaineers. Nice. Rocky Mountaineers. In fact, there's a picture right in the front of my book there, I think on the first page or so.
Yeah, I've got Jake's.
Yeah, right here.
There it is. I've got Jake's book, An American Tiger. It's his autobiography. It's a great. And by the way, Jake's holding a white tiger. Yeah.
Tiger, yeah.
So we're going to talk about that before we're done. But I'm looking at the picture in this with you and it looks like a pretty rickety stage.
Well, this is the picture of my band here, just Rocky Mountaineers.
Oh, okay.
That's my oldest brother's playing guitar. I was playing steel guitar. I played steel guitar all the way through high school and college. This was a picturesque in Morocco. I spent most of my military career in Morocco, and we landed with a country western band in Morocco.
Wow.
Played for the bullfights in Casablanca.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fun. Yeah, and they played for a national music festival, and we were the our country western band was American representative.
Oh, wow. Jake, you ended up playing country western music in Morocco. Then what?
Well, then I played music, and actually, when I got out of the service, I played music for a while. I played music all the time in the service. We played on the Armed Forces Network and played music, and played out of Nashville for a while. I toured with Marty Robbins.
I've met Marty Robbins in Austin, Texas.
Out in the West Texas town of El Paso, I fell in love with a Mexican girl. Now, if I could sing like Marty, I'd still be playing music. But in fact, I made a decision that Ray Price tried out. He offered me a job to go tour, if you heard of Ray Price. And I decided that day, said I didn't want to be a bum musician. If I could sing like those guys, you know, there was money in it. But I'm a lead guitar player. So yeah. I still do. I still play lead guitar. Mm-hmm. By the way.
Yeah, at the Perfect Landing out in Aurora, right?
Yeah. And I play fairly good guitar, by the way. So, you know, and that's my hobby now. So I decided to go back to Bozeman, Montana, because I worked my way through college playing music and teaching guitar. I ended up teaching guitar in a music store in Bozeman, Montana, made money. I actually made money, bought a car. So anyway, I got out of the service. I decided to go back to Bozeman, not be a touring musician, and start teaching guitar. This was in the 50s, and everybody wanted to play the guitar.
Yeah.
The secret to free enterprise is find the need and fulfill that need. That's the secret. You know, it was Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook or Bill Gates, whatever. Find a need. And so there was a need for somebody to know about guitar. So I had a little guitar studio, and there was a store for sale right downtown, middle of town, Bozeman, Montana. Half interest for $1,500. And another thing that I try to teach young people is, hey, save cash. I mean, cash will open doors. Good credit and cash will open doors.
Mm, yeah.
And so I had $1,500 cash, bought half interest at this music store, and made a deal with my partner to buy out his half interest for $3,000 a year later. So anyway, I proud owner of this music store right downtown Bozeman, Montana. Little lesson there, a couple lessons, entrepreneurship lessons is, I doubled my volume every year I had my music store. So after the first year, I went to borrow this $3,000 from the bank to buy my partner out. And one bad thing about business is you have to put money back in the business because you got to buy delivery vehicles, you got to buy inventory, you got receivables, you got computers or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you don't land up with any cash. I mean, and one lesson learned there is, put the money back in the business, which I was doing. So I went to borrow this $3,000 at the bank, and I didn't have a financial statement. The bank said, I didn't know what a financial statement was.
Yeah.
And so today, part of what I'm doing with my gifts to college and what I'm working with them is, hey, today everybody should learn business. I don't care if you're a janitor in a school, you're probably buying supplies.
Yep.
And materials and things, you need to have some business skills. So I encourage everybody, whether it's engineering or nursing or whatever, to take some business classes. I didn't do that. I graduated in VOAG. I'm supposed to be a VOAG teacher in high school. So I'm a little out of my field. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we see too, and you and I have talked, we're not going to get into politics today. Well, you know, I'm with the Colorado Association of Commerce and Industry is my day job. And we spend our time looking at policy that impacts business. And it's amazing how few people who make policy that impact business really understand business and how those things impact. And it would be great if many, many more people understood basic business principles.
Yeah. I encourage everybody, young people, to take business courses and marketing classes and advertising.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm trying to borrow this $3,000, and I tell he's not going to lend me this money because I didn't have a financial statement.
Yeah.
So we're making a financial one. And so I told him, I said, by the way, I have 30 head of cattle on the ranch at home. And the story there was our start in life was a heifer calf. So when we graduated from high school, Dad gave us boys a heifer calf. Hmm. And this was 8 years later, so I got 30 head of cattle. And bankers in Montana understand that.
Yeah.
So he took my 30 head of cattle as collateral.
Wow. See,
so what I teach young people, hey, if you're going to go borrow money from the bank, if they're going to give you money, they want something in return. And what they want in return is some collateral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to give you money on your good looks.
They're going to get, well, you maybe, but yeah. No,
but they're going to give you money on collateral. So anyway, I got the $3,000 by mortgaging the cattle. So I went back to my partner to give him the $3,000, and he said, I decided I'm not going to sell it because the business was going this way, going way up.
Hmm.
And so I went back to the attorney, and it was his attorney who drew up the agreement. And lesson learned there, hey, use your own attorneys. Don't use somebody else's attorney. And the attorney says, I'm not going to help you. So I went back to my partner, and I had to get rid of my partner. Now, the reason I had to get rid of my partner is at that time, Elvis Presley was the hottest thing on the market. When he came out of the record, it sold a million copies just when he announced the record. And so kids would come in and say, I want an Elvis Presley record. He says, we don't sell Elvis Presley
Wow.
records. So the lesson learned there, hey, is you got to go with what's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't willing to do that. He didn't like guitars. He didn't like Elvis Presley. And he didn't want to sell Elvis Presley records. A big mistake.
Yeah.
I think one reason I've been successful is because I don't come from a furniture background. My parents were farmers. And you got to go with what's hot. Like right now, this vintage rustic look is on. We were talking about that when Tom was here.
Yeah.
So you got to learn to go with what's hot. And I think that's what I've been willing to do because I don't have bias against any particular style or a finish or anything like that.
One of the things that I find so intriguing, because Jake, you've been at this over 40 years, right?
Right.
And you've now said you've made two references to one, to staying with what's hot, and two, with understanding and embracing technology.
Right.
You know, what's your mindset around staying fresh as you keep this business just continuing to grow?
Yeah, today in particular, you have to really be on top of what's going on. You know, everybody's got an iPhone in their pocket today, and that iPhone's got so much information on it today. So you got to embrace change. You got to embrace technology. And that's what I do. I think that comes from, I don't come from a business background, so I've always thought, well, something new, let's try it. So today you have to do that. You have to be social media savvy today. You really do. I preach that to young people because social media is, when we opened our store in Arizona,
that was just, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, in 2013, mm-hmm. I opened a store in Gilbert, Arizona. And what it was, there was a need for a good furniture store in Arizona. And I knew that because I had a factory in Montana for a while. I've done quite a few things in my life, by the way. And I was selling a lot of dealers in Arizona. And I was calling on them myself. My wife, we had a place down there, and they'd go down a lot. And there wasn't a good store in Arizona. So I decided to open a store down there. So in 2013, we opened this store in Gilbert, Arizona. But I wanted to open it with just social media because advertising is so tough today. What's really changed in retail business is advertising. When I give speeches to young kids, how many of you take a newspaper? Not one hand goes up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody.
Yep.
I say, for you guys that know what a newspaper is, when you're driving up a driveway and there's a bump, that's a newspaper.
That's great.
But young people don't take a newspaper.
Yeah.
And TV is so fragmented. There's hundreds of TV saying to keep at them. So how do you advertise a business today? It's really tough. But you can do it on social media. I wanted to prove I could. So I own Gilbert, Arizona. In September 2013, just social media advertising did $3 million the first month.
Wow.
Just social media. Huh. So it can be done. Now, the lesson learned there for young people is, hey, you can start a business today and just on social media. If you know how to do Facebook, you know how to do Twitter, you know how to help, you know how to Pinterest, you know how to do all those things, you can do that. And that's pretty much free. So there's an opportunity there for young people to open businesses today with just social media.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
It is pretty. I mean, between if you launch a web-based business, use social media, you can build something.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of opportunity.
Now I interrupted you and asked you a couple of questions. You were talking about how you moved into got your first American furniture business.
Yeah, okay. Well, let me. What happened with the music store? I had the music store for 5 years, and I went to own the store in Billings, which is a bigger market, and they wouldn't let me take my franchises with me. I was a Fender guitar player, and I couldn't take Fender guitars to Billings because they had a dealer there that they were protecting. Now, the lesson learned there is to be leery of franchises, because you can have a Lazy Boy recliner franchise, for example. You wanted to open one in Colorado Springs. Well, you couldn't do it because it's already franchises taken because it restricts you. So I just lost interest in music. Now, the lesson learned there, you got to have a passion for what you do. And what I did, I lost my passion for the music business. I remember my wife saying, "Hey, are you going to go to work today, Dad?" because you got to like what you're doing and have a passion. Yeah. If you don't, and I lost my passion for the French music because I couldn't expand my business. I could always have a big store in Bozeman, but if I go to a bigger market, I couldn't do it.
So it sounds like that just frustrated you to the point where, if you couldn't grow it, what's the point at that?
Yeah, so I sold my store. So I retired. I was 30 years old.
That was the last time you retired, right?
No, I retired one time after that.
Oh, you did, all right.
I was 30 years old, I retired. Wow. But that's pretty boring, retiring. Now, but what I did, lesson learned there is I had cash, sold my stores for cash, I had money. I didn't have to take a job. I was offered a lot of jobs, but I didn't take a job because I had some capital. So I preach to young people today, if you have some, keep a little reserve and live below your means and have some money. So if you do get fired, you lose your job, you don't have to take the first job.
Yeah.
Is it like I mentioned I never had to make a car payment. Just look at the money I've saved, but I always paid cash. I've never made a house payment. Paid cash for houses.
See, the only money you ever borrowed was that $3,000 to start your music business, leveraging your cows?
Over the years, I've borrowed some money over the years. But the point I'm making is I encourage young people to stay
debt-free.
Debt-free. And then you can pick your jobs. You don't have to take a job for $10 an hour because you got a car payment or a house payment. So that's kind of a lesson learned there. Yeah. And so...
So Jake, you ended your retirement and got into the furniture business.
Yeah. So anyway, I actually started running sales. Distributor, I ended up being a big Motorola dealer, selling TVs. TVs came into Bozeman, and a little entrepreneurship thing there too that I learned is there was a cable system in Bozeman, and they wanted $135 because Bozeman was surrounded by mountains, there was no TV station, and it was a lot of money for a cable installation. So I'm sitting there thinking, man, a lot of people would like to have TV, but they can't afford $135. So I went to the cable system. I said, if I bought 100 installations, what do you sell them to me? He said, yeah, we'll sell them to you $100. So I went to my Motorola distributor and I said, I've got this deal with the cable system, the $35 discount on their cable installation. So sell me a TV at a bargain and I'll advertise it. I get if you buy a Motorola TV, you get a free cable installation.
Wow.
Now, that was the first time that I had people lined up the door buying. Now, the lesson learned there is a risk. I mean, this was a $10,000.
You had to pay up front for those installations, right?
I didn't really have it was a big risk.
Wow.
But that's what entrepreneurs, they do. They take risks. They figure out a need. There was a need there for, somebody to sell cable systems at a discount. And so that's what entrepreneurs do. So I was very successful. I doubled my volume ever. I had the music store. I was doing a huge business. But that's what entrepreneurs do is they take risks. So from that, I start selling furniture in my music store, actually. My top floor was empty. And a guy came through, and he was a salesman for a distributing company, and he landed up buying a carload of furniture. Again, a risk. But I saw that everybody needed furniture.
Sure.
I sold the furniture cheap. And lined up the door buying furniture. So that's how I really got in the furniture business.
Let's take a break to remind you that you're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You're listening to an interview I did with Jake Jabs of American Furniture Warehouse on live radio, repurposed for this podcast. Jake, you're bringing us up to speed on sort of how you got your business started. You mentioned the first furniture you bought was for your guitar shop, right?
Right. Yeah.
Keep going and tell us how that.
Let me tell you how I got American Furniture started. I landed with a factory in Montana making furniture, actually. It was kind of between the music store and the American Furniture. And I was selling Mangurians, who had built that big building down on Furniture Row on 54th and I-25. And there was a huge recession, 74, 75. And every store down there became empty. The old American Furniture went out of business. Mangurians went out of business. Mm-hmm. Every building was empty. And I was selling them, and I said, looks like there's an opportunity maybe for this farm kid from Montana to go a big market like Denver and go in the furniture business. And by the way, I wrote a book about recessions.
I've got it right in front of me. Yeah. It says Thriving in Tough Times by Jake Jabs.
And I've been there, by the way. I've been there a few times. But this huge recession, so everybody was empty. So there's some opportunities in recessions, a couple opportunities. A lot of, like, if you would have bought an apartment house here, say, 3 years ago, in fact, this is my one son-in-law is doing that, and he bought several of them. And right now, he's made like 30% profit. So during recession, you find distressed properties, fix them up, distressed properties. And recession, and recession's over, you can make some real money.
But you got to have the cash available when things turn down.
Yeah, so there again, you have cash. Mm-hmm. The other thing you can do in recession, a lot of times there's businesses that are wanting to turn assets into cash. And this is what happened then. This was the old American Furniture. They had 8 stores. They went out of business. They'd moved all of their equipment, all their typewriters, adding machines, trucks, and everything into that big building. And they wanted to turn those into cash. And it was on their books at $1.5 million. And I offered them $80,000. I bought $1.5 million worth of assets for $80,000 cash.
Wow.
So the lessons learned there is there's opportunities.
Have and cash.
People that wanted to turn things that were like say, desks and all that stuff into cash. So all of a sudden now I had this 180,000 square foot building. There was a 20-year lease in that building at $1 square foot, which was a pretty good deal.
Wow, yeah.
So I took the lease over and had this this empty warehouse full of equipment. So what I needed to do was fill it full of furniture. So we went to the North Carolina furniture market, 3 of us, and we bought $1 million worth of furniture and they shipped it because I had a 1 credit rating. The lesson learned there, guys, good credit a lot of times will open doors. So they shipped me $1 million worth of furniture on my good credit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how did you establish that much credit to get $1 million worth?
Because in that interim between music store and my factory and everything, I developed a good credit rating.
Wow.
There's lines where they rate businesses done in bad streets.
Right.
So I had one credit rating from my factory and selling dealers. So anyway. So good credit opens doors. So anyway, now I had this 180,000 square foot building full of furniture. Now I needed to sell it. Now it was recommended to me by certain people that you do commercials. So I called, at that time it was broadcast stations. This was before cable and all that stuff.
Right.
So Channel 2 had the best price. So they sent in 4 guys. They sent in a videographer, a talent, a script writer, and a lighting guy. So we're filming this really promotional. It was $199 for a sofa, love seat, and chair. Now this was a promotional, it's a doorbuster type.
Yeah.
So the script says it's wonderful, beautiful, gorgeous, and I'm looking at this thing. I said, no, this is not wonderful.
The furniture is not lovely, beautiful. It's $199.
So I take the script away from him, and I cross out all these adjectives. And the talent, he didn't know furniture from a hole in the ground, so I thought, man. So the lesson learned there, and I teach young people today, do your own advertising. If you farm out your advertising, the person, the third party that's doing your ad, they don't know your business. They'll say things that maybe ain't true. And the secret to advertising is be truthful. Today, you have to be 100% truthful in advertising. Because, again, people can blog you, they can Yelp you and everything. So I learned that lesson right away. So I decided that I'm going to make my own commercials. Because they're going to be honest. I'm not going to exaggerate or throw in a bunch of stuff that ain't true.
Yep.
And it worked. Yep. Bottom line is it worked.
And Jake, I've been asked, so many people know that I know you, and they ask me a lot of questions about, doing your own commercials and how you feel about that. So what's your take on continuing to do that?
Yeah. Well, like I say, you should write your own copy. I think all young people today should take marketing classes, advertising classes. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, but those classes tell you to hire an agency.
Well, that's a mistake. It's a mistake. You should do it yourself because, like I say, a third party, they don't know your business and they'll say things that aren't true. So I encourage young people to because you know your business.
Yeah.
You can sit down and write a commercial. It's no big deal. It takes a little confidence to do it. So that's what they should be teaching in the schools is to do on advertising. So anyway, to finish my story, so it worked. We saw our business take an immediate increase. Once I started doing my own commercials, we saw a 20% in our business just start going really well. So that's the advantage of doing your own commercials.
Yeah. Now, I think we've kept the audience waiting long enough to find out how the tiger made its way into your brand.
Okay.
What's the story with that?
Okay. What happened there is my wife and I have 3 daughters. and we bought our daughter the puppy for Christmas. And and by the way, when I'm doing a lot of public things, how many of you have dogs? Almost every hand goes
up. How many of you have tigers?
But it's amazing the amount of people that have dogs.
Yeah.
So we bought our daughters a puppy for Christmas, and they said, Dad, you should put the puppy on TV. And I did. And right away, the phones start ringing, and people start saying, you need to put my big black ugly, I mean, your big black Labrador or whatever it was on TV. So we start using some animal besides the puppy.
Were using what, customers' animals?
Yeah.
Or friends?
Right, yeah. So anyway, there was a guy filming for Johnny Hawes Lincoln Mercury.
Yeah.
And the cougar at that time was a symbol for the Mercury car.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that was doing the film, Glenn Owens, he brought his pictures down. He said, Jake, you should use these exotic animals on your commercials. And I didn't get it. I don't get exotic animals and furniture. I don't get it. So I'm not going to do it. Well, my secretary always wanted to pet a baby tiger. So she conned him. She was privy to this conversation. So she conned him into bringing a baby tiger down. Her office is right next to mine. So I go to work the next morning, and she's got this baby tiger down there. And here's all the employees gathered around.
Oh, wow.
Oh, can I, So I saw some real interest in exotic animals versus domestic animals.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I start using the exotic animals. So, yeah, I don't own them.
Yep.
You don't want to own them.
No, you don't want to.
They do not make good pets.
No, and you don't use them now, right? I mean, that whole rules around that have changed.
Yeah, But for years we used them. And one reason I got along well with them, being raised on the farm in Montana, we had every type of animal you can think of. I broke the saddle horses. I actually rode in rodeos and broke the horses. I rode with the Montana State College rodeo team. But anyway.
Really? You roped?
Yeah. No, I was a saddle bronc rider.
Wow.
Yeah, I made money. Riding in rodeos.
Oh, man, bronc, you're still walking today.
As a kid, that was fun. It's fun. That was a fun time, used to go around riding all these rodeos. But anyway, so I was born and raised with animals on the farm. So you learn how to get along with me. If you learn how to get along with a horse, you can probably get along with
A tiger? I don't know about that.
You're listening to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You're listening to an interview I did with Jake Jabs of American Furniture Warehouse on live radio, repurposed for this podcast. Please visit proco360.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter. It has news about upcoming episodes and my blog and books I'm listening to on Audible. Again, that's proco360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with Jake Jabs. Please share it with friends.
What I wanted to ask you about is how you've turned it from one store into what's now everywhere.
14 stores now. Well, what happens, you keep your credit good, and we land up buying out some other stores. And again, the big recessions of the 80s, probably everybody in Colorado remembers the recession of the 80s. Yeah. That was a tough one. But I bought Vogue Furniture, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And so you take opportunity. I bought out Weberg's, Rhodes, bought out Homestead House.
Yep.
So what you do, and most of these deals were really good deals. For example, we bought out the Homestead House stores, that was about 6 years ago, paid 30 cents in a dollar.
Wow,
You can find deals. And again, during recessions, you can find distressed deals out there. So that's what I did. I bought out stores and converted them into American Furniture Warehouse stores. So I grew my business that way. And a lot of those deals, you can get a building at a good rent deal or buy a property. And actually, in some of those deals, I brought the properties at the pennies on the dollars, too. So that's how I really grew my business, along with just stores. My original store will end up doing a lot of business.
Oh, So really, when you're strong, when others are weak, creates opportunities for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've always wondered, and we've spoken in the past too, about your philosophy of pricing. There's a lot of, especially furniture stores or others, really feel like they want to be at the high end. They want high, expensive products and and your philosophy is different. Yours is all about giving customers a bargain, right?
Well, I copied there? I copied Walmart, Sam Walton.
Really?
Sam Walton's theory was, I'm not going to merchant. You know what merchandising is?
Sure. How you display products on the floor and so forth.
Well, but you take let's say this office chair. You look at that office chair. You say, this office chair costs $50 wholesale. Now you could sell it for $100. Or maybe I could. A lot of dealers think, I could sell it for $149. Whatever. But Sam Walton's theory was, I'm going to take a low markup on everything. I'm not going to merchandise my product. So whatever I sell, I'm taking a low markup on everything. Now, what that does, that kind of shuts out competition coming in and trying to merchandise and make more margin. And that's one of the things that lots of many furniture people do. They try to make more money. Now, I've always used history. I'm just going to sell everything at a low margin. And I'm going to try to play games about, well, I can make more money on this chair or this sofa or this entertainment center, whatever it is. And it's worked. So whatever we buy, whatever we buy. I remember that I hired the gal who's a manager at the Homestead House, and she's now my accessory buyer. So she came to with me, and she was marking accessories up. And I said, Judy, I was slapping her hands. I said, Judy, we don't do that four-time markup like Homestead House did. You know, we work on about a 35% margins. And so I had trained her to take low margins, and we sell accessories like crazy today. So that's kind of the secret, to just sell everything. And that way competitors can't come in and take part of your business.
Yeah, that I didn't realize quite how low your margins are. That's pretty interesting to me, because I thought I had a stint in the furniture business for a couple of years way long ago. And I think the margin, typical margin was, you know, the list price was about 300, but about three times what you actually sell it for. And you'd sell it for about twice what you paid for it in a typical furniture business.
Yeah, that's typical markup. Yeah. I never went there. Yeah.
That's interesting to me.
But see, the other secret is if you're selling it right, you know, not overselling, overpromising, and you don't get it back. The thing that kills so many stores, I mean, you can go out here in Colorado and look at some of my competitors here. You go in their store and you see all these returns and damaged merchandise and all that stuff. We get less than 3%. We get about 2% returns from customers.
What's industry average?
It's about 30%.
Wow.
Yeah. So you see the difference?
Yeah, it's huge.
Have big clearance. Most furniture companies have big clearance center store. They have whole buildings of clearance stores. You know, I can name you on and on the people that have. Well, we don't do that. By selling it right, not overpromising, we don't get merchandise back from customers. And that's what kills most furniture stores, is so many returns, the Levitts, the Weber's, the Rhodes, and on and on. They get so many.
The ones that went by the wayside, were incurring costs associated.
And I say, all you have to look at stores here in Denver, the same problem. So the problem is just selling it right, not overpromising, not overselling, and marrying the customer with the merchandise.
I'm going to ask you about a couple of the new product lines that you've got one has to do with photo art, right? And that you're quite proud of how you've nurtured that line.
Now, let me tell you how that started. When the recession started in 08, there was a canvas company in Longmont called Surfer Graphics, and they were struggling a little bit. I mean, the company was financially solid, but I mean, their sales, they needed more sales because the recession was on. So we went to them and said, can you make canvas giclées? They said, yes, we can. And they're it's a very great operation, highly automated and everything. So they started making the generator. Now, we had a couple of guys working for us that took pictures. In fact, we take a picture of everything that comes in. And so these were professional photographers. And so they started taking photographs, and then we started expanding. So today, this thing has grown unbelievably. Well, probably one of the most successful things we've ever done. So Circle Graphics today is making, we have over 300 of these. I walked around your office here today, and every piece of art in here was from our store. You didn't know that, did you?
No, you pointed it out. You're like, that's mine. That's mine. I'm amazed at how you personally can recognize something that came from your – and you've got thousands of items. Yeah. And you can see something and say, that's American furniture.
That's what I do.
Yeah,
you know, I'm on the floor every day. You know, I'm a hands-on guy. That's the other thing that people don't realize. A lot of times they think when your company gets big, the owners have big – houses in Florida or something like that. I mean, I don't go there. I enjoy what I'm doing. I enjoy my business, and I go to work every day.
And you're still a cost-conscious guy. You were teasing me because you didn't the kind of car you drive, right?
That's right. You know, I drove up here today with actually 11-year-old Yukon.
Yeah.
Still running good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't waste money buying new cars and expensive houses and all that stuff.
Well, I think that attitude, it strikes me that your attitude about not being wasteful – that whole attitude about keeping costs and prices down is what drives your agenda within your relationship with your customers.
Exactly, right, yeah. So anyway, this thing is growing. So now I have over 50 different art. Now, we pay the artists a commission. I'm talking about our Artists of the West program.
The ones that are providing the photos.
Yeah, we called it the Colorado Artists, and then when we opened the stores in Arizona, we called it Artists of the West. Mm-hmm. So I pay these guys a commission. I have over 50 of these now. Mm-hmm. So it's good for them.
Yeah,
actually, I got a couple of them and sent $1,000 a month to check to. commission.
These are photographers that might not otherwise be able to make a living.
Yeah, and so it's good for them. It's good for Circle Graphics because and we're shipping these now all over the country direct from the factory.
Wow.
It's become a huge successful deal. It's a great value. Mm-hmm. Our prices run from $15 to $94.
Yeah, yeah.
These one pictures that you've got on the walls here, the highest price was $94.
Wow.
And these are things you see, like we're a sponsor of the National Western Stock Show, and there was a guy right down the hall from us that had this article. In fact, I walked by, I thought, this is one of ours. It wasn't. He wanted $800.
Oh.
We're selling for $94,
wow.
And he was wanting $800 for the same product.
Wow.
So it's a great value. Yeah. People are businesses like here come in, they do their whole office with our artwork.
Is it tougher? You've gotten into some electronics, haven't you?
Yes, we sell LG.
The margins on those are a lot skinnier, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is it harder to differentiate your pricing and so forth on when those margins are so tight?
Yeah. The only reason we really do the electronics guys, there's no money in electronics. I recommend a lot of things. I don't recommend you go into the electronics business because there's no money in it. But we do sell that man cave, a whole lot of the furniture that goes with the man cave.
Yeah, the whole packaged man cave.
That's the only reason we're in electronics. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in electronics.
Got it. So if someone's having some man cave setup delivered, they can have the TV at the same time and all stuff.
All the accessories and the sofas and the entertainment centers and all that stuff.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, you told me something I wasn't aware of at all. You had a background in rodeo. And that's something I've read your books. It's not in there.
Okay.
So is that a secret?
No, it's not a secret. No, I just never thought of it, I guess, at the time. You know, the thing I was trying to do in my book is teach business principles. You know, that's what the book is about. And I think rodeo, there's not much money in rodeo, by the way.
I suppose that's not the way to make money.
No, the trouble with the rodeo business, you got to pay an entry fee. You pay an entry fee. And I mean, when I was rodeoing back in the 50s, it was a $30, $40 in these small rodeos in Montana. Then you got to win some money or you lose your entrance fee. So,
oh, really? So you'd lose money participating in the rodeo?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did a lot of cowboys that have lost money.
Wow.
I don't know what the entry fee is like the National Western. I imagine it's probably $300 or something like that to opportunity to ride it. So if you don't win any money, you lose your entrance
fee. That's a tough business model.
Yeah, so I don't recommend.
So I want to end with a couple of questions about really practical aspects of running a business. And you've got some very specific ways to work with salespeople on your team. How many out of your 2,700 employees, how many do you think are salespeople?
500.
500. So we've got a couple minutes left. What kinds of ideas do you have around helping salespeople to be successful?
Okay. Number one is today you just need to be honest. I preach that honesty because people want to buy from honest people. And the other thing is, one thing that kills kind of furniture stores, when I say in Arizona, they have what they call the up system in the furniture business, where the customer comes in, they assign a salesman.
They take turns, essentially. There's a line of salesmen.
Everybody does it. To my knowledge, every furniture store does that. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I've never had the up system. Because the trouble with that is this salesman is shadowing the customer around the store. And women hate that. Mm-hmm. And then what happens in the furniture stores, all of them, they look for profit centers. So they say, well, we're going to sell furniture polish. You know, we pay 50 cents for this bottle of furniture, we're going to sell it for $5. That's a huge profit. So they put a quota for the salesman to sell furniture polish.
Hmm.
Warranties. Warranties is all profit. It's 100% profit. Hmm. They're selling warranties. So they go around and they give quotas for salesmen. Every one of these stores I mentioned, Levitt's, Weber's, Rhodes,
the ones that failed,
all had warranties. And so many other businesses are doing that today, too. My daughter just bought a new Jeep car, and she paid cash for it. And the guy says, before I give you your keys, you got to go in and talk to the sales manager. He's trying to sell her a $5,000 warranty on a brand new Jeep. Why? There's not a lot of margin in the car itself. But the 5,000,
all the add-ons,
that's profit. Yep. It's all profit.
Well,
so that's what the thing I think it kills businesses. So we don't sell.
You want to be straightforward.
That's right. Yep. We sell furniture.
Oh,
Jake, no warranties. No snake oil.
That's a great way to end the show, Jake Jabs. You've been so fun to have on the show.
I'm your host, Dave Tabor, on ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. You've been listening to my interview with Jake Jabs of American Furniture Warehouse. he certainly exemplifies my mission to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show, and by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, and Jones and Keller, and my producer, Luke Woodruff. This show and past shows are available at proco360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo 360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.